All right, call to order. Highlight Rural Fire District. Reminder to the public that meetings are being recorded. Is there any public comments on matters not included in the agenda? Seeing none. Consent agenda. Do we need to pull anything for review? On the consent? No? Do I have a motion to approve consent agenda?
Motion to approve consent as presented.
Second.
JJ?
Yes.
Walt?
Yes.
Ken?
Yes.
Justin?
Yes. First item on the list, Brian.
All right. So, completed another recruit academy. And we are going to do our swearing in oath on our new firefighters. So, we have Mr. Porter and Ms. Ventabrosa. Here, we do have one additional firefighter that completed the academy. He couldn't be here because he is in the EMT class now currently. So we just have two of the three. So you guys want to stand up. So we'll do just quick introductions. You guys want to introduce yourself, please?
Yeah, sure. So I'm Ben Porter. I'm originally from Massachusetts. A pre-med student at Lincoln School.
Nice.
My name is Kyle Ventrosa. I'm from North Dakota, and I'm a criminology student at MSU.
Nice.
So, we will do our swearing in oath. So, if you guys would please raise your right hand and repeat after me. I do solemnly swear to faithfully execute my duties as a firefighter for the Highlight Fire District.
I do solemnly swear to faithfully execute my duties as a firefighter for the Highlight Fire District.
To selflessly serve the citizens with respect, integrity, and excellence.
To selflessly serve the citizens with respect, integrity, and excellence.
To support my fellow firefighters, our values, and show a continuous effort to improve our team.
To support my fellow firefighters, our values, and show a continuous effort to improve our team.
To uphold the mission of the Highlight Fire District, the Constitution of the United States of America, and the State of Montana.
To uphold the mission of the Highlight Fire District, the Constitution of the United States of America, and the State of Montana.
Thank you.
Congratulations.
Yep. Thank you.
Just to remind the board, so these guys completed the academy that Mac is still generous to join us this evening, who is now overseeing our academies as our training captain. It's 175 hours, so they put in a lot of time to get to this point, and now they are on the streets doing the work for us. So.
Mac used to be 6'4 and have hair, too. What'd you guys do to him?
Was that last fire?
I think it's young people that do that to you.
Oh, really?
That's what did it to me.
So I'd just like to, again, thank Matt for his hard work. Those academies are a lot of work to get done and take a lot of organization, so thank you, Matt.
Yes, thank you. Thank you guys for what you do. Discussion and decision approval of revised board policies. Do you want to look at both of those that we changed?
She sent me the drafts and they were okay then. So. I suspect. Let us just roll the dice and trust.
Here's the two new ones. We have.
This is the one where we tried to unlimber.
The invoice processing policy and travel expense policy.
Perfect.
Do you want us to do them separately, or can we approve both of them together? Or?
You can probably do it as one.
Yeah. Okay.
They'll do them both at the same time.
Okay. Do we have a motion to approve both new policies?
So moved.
JJ?
Yes.
Walt?
Yes.
Ken?
Yes.
Justin?
Yes.
Okay.
Okay. Approval of contract with Sourcewell Cooperative, the Pierce Manufacturing contract. Brian?
Yes. Do you guys have, do they have this or the actual contract?
I've got the cooperative and the Pierce.
Yep. Okay. Yep. So the Pierce agreement, what Justin has there in front of him. So if you guys remember, we looked at last month the pricing. Just give you right the background. So this is the replacement of engine 6.2 and engine 6.3. We elected last month to utilize Sourcewell's purchasing agreement. So we're still in alignment with the competitive bidding RFP process, which has just been done already by Sourcewell with Pierce Manufacturing. So what we're looking for tonight is a motion and to sign the actual agreement to move this process forward. The things I want to point out to you guys, so we talked about a little bit of, right, the stars aligning and the capital replacement budget. So if you look in the agreement, it states we're at about a 24-month build process. So it's a ways out to actually get these trucks done.
At least it's not 2 years.
At least it's not 2 years. So we did elect to go with some cost savings, which are reflected in the contract, doing the chassis progress payment and then the full payment upon acceptance of the apparatus. And then thirdly, that we will drive the trucks back ourselves. Then you can look in the contract. So the chassis progress payment is due 3 months prior to completion. And the reason I wanted to bring that up to you guys is we won't have to put money out for the trucks until that 3 months. So we're looking to be about March of 2024 is when we would have to make the first payment to the trucks. And I don't remember off the top of my head, it's listed, yep, the $728,428 is gonna be the payment due at that time. And then the payment upon completion is basically saying in June of 2024, when the trucks are completed, we will bring the check for the final amount with us and basically pay for the trucks at that point. And then the customer drive-out discount is, it's $5,000 per truck, so it saved us $10,000 for us to drive the trucks back ourselves, rather than paying them to drive them back. So the cost is the same that was reflected upon from their previous quote. So like I said, this is just moving forward with the purchase of these trucks.
Any board discussion?
So refresh my memory again. So Sourcewell, how do they make their money on this then?
So Sourcewell makes their money from the, so they have contracts with hundreds of different suppliers. And basically they make their money off of the suppliers. So it's no cost to us as the customer. What they do is they charge a fee for, say, Pierce to provide a bid to them. And that's what they make their money on. Mm. And so I think we covered it a little bit, but just to refresh your guys' memory. So they did an RFP process. They do it annually. And basically, Pierce gives them their competitive price for an apparatus in this kind of range. We're allowed to make changes off of that. We just have to stay within 25% of what that competitive price was.
And then in terms of progress, do you guys still end up having to go on site, or does Sourcewell take care of all those progress evaluations?
No, so it's still on us. So really, this point going forward, it'd just be kind of the traditional way of how we've purchased trucks in the past. So going forward, we'll have to go and do a print approval, an approval of our specification for the trucks before they can go into production. And then we go out, we elect to do the print approval visit and then the final visit to do the final inspection. And that's when that final payment will be due, is when we do that final inspection of the trucks.
We just don't have to go through a bidding process.
Right.
Is really what that saves us.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So all the design components and everything they're on us, on you guys then to come up with those specifications then.
Yep. And that was some of that work is really done. That's part of the trip that Chris and I made to Pierce in March. It was to kind of fine tune some of those details of what we were looking for.
Yes.
I'll kind of give you guys. So it does say the Pierce Enforcer pumpers. So what we're looking at is two Pierce custom built fire engines. They will be, so the Puck design, which was the previous truck we bought in 2018, was a Puck design. And PUMP stands for Pierce Ultimate Configuration. So it'll be a custom cab truck, so it'll be kind of the traditional fire engine flat front end truck. It will be, so the pump that comes standard on a Puck is a 1500 gallon per minute pump. We'll have 1,250 gallons of water on each of the trucks. They'll both have pump and roll capabilities, they'll have front bumper turrets. The rest of it is fairly similar to the last truck we built as far as compartment configuration. And that was one of really the driving forces, is we were trying to keep some uniformity in our fleet. The benefits we saw of those two trucks, engine 6.2 and engine 6.3, is, you know, having trucks built similar that, you know, operate the same way, they're driven the same way, is just a huge benefit in the training process and people being familiar with different trucks. And it's just a big deal to be able to train them on one truck and then they can move to another truck and still be able to operate that truck.
Four-wheel drive?
So these will not be four-wheel drive, so these are just going to be rear-wheel drive. They will have a differential lock on the rear end to be able to lock the rear axle together, and then they'll come with on-spot drop tire chains on them. And that's
for something... For just the rears?
Just for the rears.
Okay.
Jason and I discussed this, you know, years ago, and Chris and I have continued these discussions. Going forward with the kind of our fleet of engines, the amount of the times we use the all-wheel drive feature on our trucks is fairly a small percentage of the time we actually go up. So kind of what we feel we can do, we have four structure fire engines, and what we'd like to do going forward is maintain two of those as all-wheel drive trucks, and then have two as rear-wheel drive trucks, and kind of set them up in the district where we see, you know, that need for all-wheel drive being used. So what we kind of talked about at Bray Station is having just a rear-wheel drive truck there. At Cottonwood Station, having an all-wheel drive truck there, and then having one of each out of this station. And just educating our crews, getting some SOPs in place, especially kind of out of sourdough to say, you know, given road conditions, the weather we know we have, selecting the right truck for the response. Over at Ray on that end of the district, we so rarely use all-wheel drive. You know, it usually, a large percent of the time, if we're using an all-wheel drive, it's in the foothills or up in Triple Tree, something like that. Is when we're using that feature. So we'll have that capability going forward out of Cottonwood and out of Sourdough, and we feel pretty confident that
will support. What kind of savings did you realize?
With all-wheel drive?
Yeah.
So the all-wheel drive feature, it's roughly a $25,000 increase to the price of the truck. So if we were going to build these both all-wheel drive, it would have been about an additional $50,000.
Okay. Nice. Any other board discussion? Do we have a sequence? Did we sign the Rustwell?
So we're signed up with Sourcewell. That was just an application, so that is good to go. So what I need tonight with Pete's absence will be Justin to sign the agreement with Pierce to move forward.
Okay.
And then do you need a motion to approve that price then?
Cool. Do we have a motion to approve the Pierce contract?
Motion to approve the Pierce contract as presented. Excuse me.
Second.
JJ?
Yes.
Walt?
Yes.
Ken?
Yes.
Justin?
Yes.
Oh, I'm still in consent agenda. That's why I was sorry.
Discussion and decision approval of fiscal year 2023 DNRC contracts.
Okay, let's get my head out straight here. I'm still jet lag, apparently. Okay, so item number four. So this is, it looks a little differently because these forms have been updated, but this is our local government firefighting force agreements with the DNRC. So this is the first part of it. It's kind of broken into three parts. So this general contract is the first part, and then the cooperative person billing rate is the second part, and then the third part is the unoperated option three form that lists equipment. So these agreements run for a year. You can look on, I think it's on each of them. They have the effective date. So they're July 1 to June 30th, so they run the fiscal year. And we have to renew them every year. The first one is just a general agreement with the DNRC and the Highlight Rural Fire District that we're entering into agreement to operate. The big change for this general agreement is the DNRC is now offering us a backfill, which basically will mean, so say when I've gone out with the county assist team in the past, we've had to have people basically cover my absence while I'm not here. And in the past, all we could offer them is comp time accrual for that. What the DNRC is now offering in backfill cost coverage for us is one of our other paid employees, if I'm out, or really if any of the employees go out to work for wildland fire for the DNRC, the DNRC is actually going to cover the cost of somebody filling those empty spots of us being gone. So it's a little better incentive, and it helps us out a little more to maintain our kind of staffing level here. So that's kind of the rest of the language is really unchanged. So the backside of it will need signature. Oh, put Pete's name on there.
And just line it through.
Line it through. For that one. The next one, so the personnel billing rate form. So our four paid positions are listed on there. So we'd have to take our salaries and break them into hourly and an overtime rate for the DNRC. That includes benefit package, so that's the rates you see there. So that's for the four paid employees, so we'll need the signature and date on that. Then the last one is the option three unoperated. And it's a lot bigger than it has been in the past, and the reason we did that, so in the past, all that's been listed was command vehicles on this option three form, and it just helps the DNRC a lot to get our, if we go into pay status with our engines or our water tenders, to have them on this form, because then we're under agreement with a price, and it just cleans things up a lot easier when we go to the billing process. The other thing that's been added to it is the UTV, when I take that out on deployments. So rates really have not changed. You can look at, so daily rates for a command vehicle are still $100 a day. the UTVs actually make more than a command vehicle, so that makes $250 a day. And then the water tenders and engines are hourly rate. So our engines will make $215 an hour, and then our water tenders are going to make $108 an hour. So that's if we go kind of beyond that first operational period, so that first day of a fire, if we continue to be out on that fire, and we go into pay status, that's what our trucks will make.
And these rates are based on a chart that they put together? Or who puts that chart together?
It's done by the state.
The state puts it together?
Yep. Mm-hmm. Hmm. Yeah. So our volunteers, if we go into pay status, they still do get paid. The way that's done is they become emergency hires through the state, so they essentially become an employee of the state, and that's how they get compensated. Mm-hmm. So it's not done through the fire district.
Brian, what's the current thought on doing emergency hires so there are employees and not state employees?
So that's an option. We would have to create an hourly rate for a firefighter, and we can essentially bring them on as hires under the Highlight Fire District, and they would essentially be listed as our personnel on our personnel form. It's just a little more work to list out the full roster on an hourly rate. And it probably would be easier on us to just keep them emergency hires, because then we don't have to worry about the benefit package at all to them. I mean, we could void it by just saying they're temporary hires and not subject to that, but it's just a little easier running them through the state.
And I can see the cost part. Is there any advantage to doing it?
So traditionally, it would get them paid a lot sooner. The state has really refined their emergency hire status, so it's done online now. And their goal is to get emergency hires paid within 30 days of their assignment. Now, we can tell you that prior to this refinement of that process, it's taken up to 2 years to get people paid, because it was a paper trail. They would have to fill out a hiring packet that was, I don't even know, 25 pages long, and then that would have to be hand-delivered to the state or the local DNRC office. It would have to be sent to Helena to get processed, and it was just a long paper trail to get them paid.
The process has been improved upon then.
The process has been improved upon. That's new this year, that it's done online.
I would be curious, I think you know my standing on it, I would much rather be belong to Highlight, mm-hmm. and us own them and be able to take care of them than relying on state workers' comp and the state,
sure.
assuming anything happened.
Yeah.
Or that we can get them paid.
Yeah.
It still takes a while,
mm-hmm.
all that. I don't know how our insurance would handle putting those guys on, or if we wouldn't offer our insurance, it would just be work comp, but it would be our work comp, not the state's work comp.
Yeah.
We'd have five people to worry about instead of 500.
Mm-hmm.
I wouldn't do what I'm doing unless I was working for Gallatin County.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And for the most part, probably for what our guys, unless we get into the business of going on deployments, which if we go into that business, I would probably be more in alignment with EJJ to say they should be employees of the district rather than emergency hires through the state. Really what we're just offering for our volunteers currently are really for more local stuff, for short-term deployments. And they'll still be covered by our workman's comp because they will be technically operating as firefighters for Highlight Fire. It's just when they go to get paid, they're paid by the state rather than by the fire district.
Thank you.
Any other board discussion?
So, Judson, we'll just need, and I can help you through it if you want to wait till...
Yeah, we'll sign everything later.
Afterwards, just to get all the signatures on there.
So do we have a motion to approve the 2023 DNRC contract?
So moved.
Second.
JJ?
Yes.
Walt?
Yes.
Ken?
Yes.
Justin?
Yes. All right, item number 5, discussion and decision on purchase a hybrid wildland fire engine with DNRC.
Yeah, so this one, I have a proposal in the board packet for you guys. You've heard me talk a little bit about this in the past, but we have the opportunity to kind of go into an agreement with the DNRC to enter into their hybrid fire engine program. And kind of what that really means is a hybrid engine. There's several in the county, several departments that utilize them. Fort Ellis Fire, Gallatin Gateway has a hybrid water tender, Big Sky Fire has these type of trucks currently. So what it really means is we purchase the cabin chassis for the truck, and then the DNRC provides the back fire unit for that truck. And basically what that allows us to do is essentially, I believe I kind of put it in language on the back, is take an engine that would roughly cost us $150,000 to $200,000 and get it for what I've kind of quoted as roughly that $70,000 mark. There's a couple different reasons why I'd like to kind of go down this route. As we go into kind of this new purchasing of our structure fire engines, we lose a little bit of wildland firefighting capability with those trucks because they're built more for structure fire fighting, where the previous twins were kind of built as an all-around truck, right? They were built as like a wildland urban interface engine, structure fire engine, and we lose a little bit of that capability. So by purchasing this new truck, it just kind of bolsters our capabilities. So currently, we have one wildland fire engine that's a county co-op truck, right? So it's provided by the county through the DNRC, and that's our Type 6 wildland engine. So this would just add a second truck to be able to fight these type of wildland fires. It'll help a lot, especially that springtime wildland fire season when the ground is wet. We can't take the big trucks off of the road without getting them stuck. And we can operate with these trucks a little easier. Not to say that these trucks don't get stuck also, they just can drive a little bit more than the big ones do. So this one would be a Type 5. So what basically that means is it would be like a 550, 5500 series chassis. And it would have 500 gallons of water on it with roughly a 250 gallon minute pump. The DNRC would plummet, and we can set it up with the front bumper turret for having a pump and roll capability. Obviously, four-wheel drive, automatic transmission. We could probably seat 5 firefighters in it. And then it would be kind of the standard wildland fire setup with the hose reel off the back. So the DNRC part of the hybrid program is they maintain the service for the wildland fire unit. So they'll come in and service the unit once a year. And then we are just still responsible for all the maintenance and the kind of ongoing preventative maintenance of the chassis of the vehicle. So I think it's a huge opportunity for us, and really can provide us a cost savings of going this route rather than if we decide we want a second wildland unit of doing this on our own, which would cost us a lot more money.
So does that truck, when it goes out on DNRC projects, do we get paid?
So we do, not to the full rate, and I explained that on the back of the proposal a little bit. So hybrid engines, because we buy the chassis and the DNRC provides the back, basically it comes down to a 67% of the hourly rate of a Type 5 engine. So the hourly rate of a Type 5 engine is $80 an hour. take 67% of that, it'd be $53.60 an hour that this truck would earn for us. Along with just expanding our wildland fire capabilities, you know, with this truck, I'd hope we could kind of open up some more opportunities to get our folks out and get some more wildland fire experience. You know, our county co-op truck, we've taken it out. Chris took it with two firefighters last year to the Alder Creek Fire over by Wisdom. And it's just not an ideal truck for getting on the road. It's a single cab manual transmission. So it's fairly uncomfortable to even get three firefighters into it. Yeah. Where
in that truck, you don't get anything for, right?
That truck doesn't make a ZAC because we don't own it. It's been more or less on loan to us.
Okay.
So we don't make any money off of that truck.
Okay.
And not to say, you know, I'm looking at this as a money-making opportunity. I mean, yes, we would make money off of it, but yeah. I'm more looking at it as an opportunity to expand our capabilities for wildland fire and do it with the cost savings of doing the DNRC hybrid program. One of the challenges currently is chassis, which I'm sure Justin's well aware of. So there are opportunities out there to get them. The back of the truck, you know, the DNRC is struggling, as everybody is with truck chassis. So they have the back builds essentially ready to go. They're just waiting on people to provide them chassis. So what I kind of like, if the board would give me the blessing to do so, is I give you guys a rough cost estimate of what we would be looking at on the front bottom of the page. Is if I find the chassis that would work for these vehicles, that I'd like to try to move fairly quickly into the purchase of that, if you guys are comfortable with moving forward with this proposal. Because it's kind of a feeding frenzy out there right now that these chassis, if they do come up on a lot, they just don't sit there. They disappear fairly quickly.
Right. So a couple of questions. So the capacity of this vehicle versus the Type 5, this one has 500 gallon. What's our current?
So our current one's a Type 6, so it has less water on it. The current truck is 250 gallons of water.
250,
yeah. Okay. Roughly the same pump. It doesn't have a bumper turret on it, so it's pump and roll capabilities are just utilizing the hose reel off of the back.
Okay. And then with regard to repair costs, so they take care of the annual maintenance on it. We're on the hook for standard operating maintenance. Repair costs, engine goes out, transmission, something like that. Who's on the hook for that?
So the fire district. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, anything to do with the truck kind of cabin chassis, the driveline, we're responsible for the maintenance of that.
And then, I guess, I suspect you probably have taken a look at, we can fit that into our capital apparatus budget then?
We can, yep. I mean, it puts a little, so the replacement cycle for the DNRC's engines are 12 years. And so if we would purchase this year, it put us essentially 12 years out to purchase a new chassis.
Mm-hmm.
And then it would just be right in alignment with getting a new fire module unit on the back of it.
Mm-hmm.
So it would fit, again, the cost of it, it doesn't have really that severe of impacts on the program, given that the cost savings that we're taking advantage of.
Mm-hmm.
Any other board discussion?
The other benefit I want to tell you guys too is utilizing the DNRC units is they have a warehouse in Missoula of every part that gets built into these trucks. So if a part breaks, there's no, you know, getting it shipped from the East Coast or anything like that. They just, either we send somebody or they bring a part down from Missoula and the truck gets fixed fairly quickly.
So those components, again, will be responsible for purchasing out of their warehouse if something goes wrong with the pumping components. The components that they've back built onto it,
right,
will be responsible for purchasing those out of their warehouse. If they should be, need to be replaced.
No, I don't think that's what you just said.
They'll do the annual maintenance on the truck. If we break something on the truck, we'll have to fix it.
We break it.
Yeah.
But if it's
something that's found in the annual maintenance, they cover that cost.
Mm-hmm.
So what if there's a failure on their pump?
I'm guessing they would probably, if it was truly a part failure, that they would go through their warranty service to get it replaced.
I think Brian said in his narrative about the critical mission task force thing that's coming down the pipe, started kind of last year, the year before. This is a growth industry, this wildland fire thing right now.
Unfortunately.
And the central and northern part of the state is dry as hell.
Mm-hmm.
So it may not be us, but it'll be somebody. Which kind of drags me back to the, I don't know if we want to get into that business, but we're all going to be in that business.
Mm-hmm.
Right? If it's a fire department, you know, you're going to be in Denton.
Yeah.
You're going to be in Rosebud County. You're going to be in Carbon County. Just because there's not resource.
Yeah.
There is nobody coming from the feds. There's nobody, which kind of brings me back to the longer term piece about if the need's going to be there, why wouldn't we do it the way we'd want to do it and set up some of those guys that want to run the critical mission task force? Because I don't know of a year recently that those guys couldn't stay pretty busy.
Yeah. That's really the business I'm looking to get into, what JJ mentioned, and I put it in my proposal, is that the critical mission task force, so those are short duration task force, 48 to 72 hour deployments.
Short notice, too.
And short notice, yeah, it's more or less the task force is requested and you need to get on the road within a couple hours generally. That's more of the business I'm looking to get into, not necessarily going down like the 14-day assignment route where,
right,
you know, the truck goes down and goes to New Mexico or, you know, whatever. Some other departments take advantage of that. But we just don't have the capability in our staffing with our volunteers to serve those. But we went out on two different critical mission task force last year. We sent folks to Red Lodge, and then the deployment that Chris went on to Alder Creek over by Wisdom. And yeah, like JJ mentioned, there was more. It's just we couldn't take advantage of them. Mm-hmm. And some of it is, you know, with the one county co-op engine that we have, right, if we send that truck out, that's the only wildland unit we have. So if it's gone, we don't have that capability of that kind of small maneuverable truck. Where this would just add a second one for us where we could keep that county co-op local because of its kind of limited abilities for crews, and we could send this hybrid engine out to.
So let me add a hypothetical scenario. So you get a call, you're involved in this critical mission type calls, those type of calls. If something happens in our district, so we're getting our people and our resources heading out of the district. Something happens, foothills here, that, you know, is likely to be a substantial impact to our constituents. What's the SOP there?
So generally, it's kind of working with that unit that you're going to assist, whether it be Denton or Wisdom or whoever, and letting them know, hey, if we break a fire back at home, Can those units be released to go assist at the home unit? Now we do certainly put. I mean, once those resource requests come out for those critical mission task force, we evaluate. You know what trucks are in service, what trucks are out of service, the number of people we have around before we send crews out on them to make sure that we're not depleting the fire district of our capabilities at home. So, I mean, the good thing is they are short duration, so they're 48 to 72 hours. So if we do break a fire back in the district, if anything, if that truck needs to stay, that truck and crew need to stay committed, it's only for that short duration that we would be without them. Versus going on the full 14-day, you know, out of state, out of the area where that resource is gone.
So are there situations that can arise where we, you know, you get multiple events occurring and you're sending out multiple teams? I mean, is there a point where you can, where we can say, you know, we don't want to spread our resources that thinly, or, you know?
Yeah, I mean, we certainly have the capability to turn an assignment down. That if the resource request comes out and we don't feel that, you know, we have enough people around, that we just say we can't fill this order.
Yeah, yeah, that'd be my concern. I mean, I fully want to be able to help people out, but also want to be careful that we don't get, you know, too committed into, you know, to responding to these types of events and then having ourselves spread so thinly that, you know, our taxpayers have put together a pretty good set of resources, and then we're in a, you know, super dry situation in August or September, and something happens, and we're spread so thinly that we can't respond adequately. And I think we need to, I guess my concern is that we're cognizant of that balance.
Certainly.
You know, that we,
yep.
willing to help people out, but we have a reasonable risk.
Yeah, absolutely. And this critical mission task force idea, it's really morphed out of, you know, the historic Montana Mutual Aid program. And the good thing about being involved in the program is, right, if we're out the door helping out the people in need, the hope is that when we have that need, that they're going to come right. Help us.
Exactly.
And, you know, what we've seen, especially last year on a really busy year, you know, they have kind of that saying that the home unit, you know, is, if you're going to go to incident management team, whatever it may be, you're responsible for 48 hours, you know, until help is going to get there. And on a busy year like last year, there's not even a guarantee at 48 hours. I mean, it could be several days before help is going to arrive. And that's where this critical mission task force has really come into play to say, you know, there's no national help coming. That, you know, either like last year there wasn't even incident management teams available because they were all committed. It was just such a busy year. And when you have that many teams committed, you have that few resources available to support those teams. So that's a huge deal that the state is driving this critical mission task force idea to say that, you know, even if it's gonna be 3, 4, 5 days until help comes in, we can still provide resources to help that fire department that's dealing with this issue.
DNRC has historically had severity funding and staffing. It's typically been in the eastern part of the state and the western part of the state. Is there any talk around here yet?
Yep, so the Central Land Office claims that they're going to utilize station staffing and that kind of critical mission staffing. There's a little bit of unclear of what the expectation of that staffing is going to be, and whether, you know, if say we staff up a truck for that, if they will truly stay here while they're staffing up, or if the DNRC is going to move them. And I think that's a concern of a lot of departments that are looking at potentially using that station staffing model is if they commit to staffing for 24, 48 hours, is, you know, will that be that unit staying in their station while they're staffing, or does it mean that they're going to get moved to an area where the DNRC wants them?
And so it's not, the state's paying you to pay your firefighters to be in the station on an engine, like a paid fire department, during high criticality times and all that. So they would pay us to put our volunteers on the roll and have them here and committed just like a job.
Yeah, which would be a huge benefit for us. I mean, if they're staying at the home, you know, outside of obviously deployments of responding to fires, I mean, it puts a crew that's paid in our station for that time period.
So what you're saying, basically, it mitigates some of that risk that, to some extent. But I mean, that's the concept.
If they put you on,
yeah,
and they need you at Park County, mm-hmm. that's where they're looking.
They're going.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And it, I mean, the whole deal, if we utilize that station staffing, if we continue to operate in this critical mission task force, the one thing, and it really showed at the Bridger Foothills, right, in Gallatin County, we just don't necessarily get a lot of big fire. And being able to send our folks out on these task force, I mean, I think Chris could speak to the experience Michael Buffington and Reed Hill got going to Alder Creek last year. Is huge knowledge gains and experience gains, and then they just bring that back to the department. Mm-hmm. And it just kind of prepares us to be able to respond when those big incidents happen, rather than, you know, we faltered, and not Highlight, but Gallatin County faltered a little bit in Bridger Foothills, because we just don't get that type of fire a lot in this area. And when it's in our back door, it's our deal. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think going back to the original discussion, to me it makes perfect sense to be able to lever that type of expenditure into acquiring a piece of equipment like that and have that as part of our resource base for that kind of, when you have that kind of cost matching, it makes sense. You know, like I can see where you're going with that request.
When you plug that into our capital replacement, and you said it doesn't make $70,000 out of all that. It's not that much money, but
yeah. That
made that did go turn it sideways for you looking at it.
You know, I'm really carefully. I think we've got that much room, or I know we have that much room. Mm-hmm. But it puts us closer to less of a comfort zone. Let's put it that way, in terms of our.
I mean, like 12% inflation.
Yeah, those types of things, exactly. Yeah, that really hurts the comfort zone.
Are you looking at a 6.4 Hemi, a diesel?
So the current model that DNRC uses is a 4, and they're using the 7.3 gas engine. But they do bid it as the option to utilize a Ford or Dodge. I don't know. I mean, the only two options they have are for Ford and Dodge. I don't know if that we could utilize. Well, Chevy doesn't even make a 5500. It's kind of a crossover between an international. But they, so either will work. So if we went with the Dodge, we could either utilize the 6.4 gas engine or the diesel Cummins engine. Okay. And same with Ford, you have the option to use that 7.3 gas or the 6.7 diesel or the Ford things.
The only reason I say is because you've got $60,000, so if a diesel came available, I don't know if you have a preference of one or the other, but.
Yeah, I mean, that price point is more aimed at a gas engine truck.
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah. And that's my hope, is to kind of stay closer to that mark.
Find a gas one.
Yeah. Okay.
Cool. And you just want a regular cab?
We prefer to go to, if we went with a Ford, go with a super cab. We go with a Dodge, go with a crew cab.
Okay. Nice. We'll carry more people.
So you're looking for the board to give you pre-approval for up to that 70, say $80,000, not to exceed $80,000.
Yeah, I think I certainly can do it in that price range.
Okay.
Yeah, it's just tough right now with not being able to actually go in and order a truck. It's kind of, you got to jump when you can find them.
So, acting chairman, I'd make the move to authorize the fire chief to spend not to exceed $80,000 to purchase a chassis for the purpose of this proposal.
Second.
JJ?
Yes.
Walt?
Yes.
Ken?
Yes.
Justin?
Yes. Okay, item number 6, discussion and decision review of staff salaries.
So this one you'll see in your packet. This is something, you know, Pete requested every year, every June, we kind of review. So this is really just more informative for you guys than anything. So we did a salary comparison with our three local paid departments, so Big Sky, Central Valley, and Bozeman. just to show comparisons of where they're at. Now, I will say they provided me numbers, all three of them provided me numbers for what they're currently at, and all three said that they will be pay bumped starting July 1. So this was their pay as a current. To kind of list out where we're at, you know, comparably. And for the most part, I wouldn't say we're doing that bad. We're obviously on the lower end, but again, we're kind of the smaller department. And you know, the conversations we've had with Pete and with the board is obviously we want to stay competitive to keep the right people around. So again, it's more just information going forward of what the area is. You know, it continues to be to go beyond the Gallatin County for comparisons. I mean, it's almost the information isn't accurate enough for us because of the cost of living here. We are just so far out of range of the rest of the state. I mean, the closest comparison might be Whitefish or, you know, the Kalispell area. But if we really wanted to go beyond that, we almost have to go outside of the state to an area that's comparable to Bozeman.
No place is comparable.
Great. So you've got discussion and decision. Are we wanting to...
There's really no decision to make because, I mean, we've already approved the salaries in the preliminary budget, so it, again, it's just more informative to say where we're at.
Okay.
He's setting the stage for negotiations coming up.
Yeah, and I mean, Pete did have the right idea, right? When I come to you guys and say, hey, we need to look at doing a pay bump, it's good to have something to compare to show that I'm just trying to get raises that at will.
So, refresh my memory. When we hired you, we talked about after completion of a year, you know, you got your bump. Did we set anything up like other state agencies that's a percentage every year? Or do we...
Not every year.
Yeah, no, we left it to be negotiable. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Discussion on that?
Okay.
All right, number 7, fire chief's report.
Okay. So you can see out of my chief's report, we're still getting busier. We're actually a little slower compared to last year, but if you compare it to the call averaging over the last few years, we're still up. Roster's still looking good. Residency is still currently full. We have had some changes at Sourdough and Cottonwood, just with some people moving out and other people moving in. So Reed Hill, who was a firefighter at Sourdough, he took a seasonal wildland fire job for the summer, so he moved out. He will be returning to the department in the fall. Cale Pickett, who has been a longtime resident here at Sourdough, was accepted into medical school, so he moved out of the station to be able to start medical school. excuse me. and then Brianna Scher and John Pemberton have moved into Sourdough to fill those spots. Cottonwood, again, Nate Leahy, he's done this for several years now. He's a wildland firefighter, and he left for his job. So he moved out of Cottonwood, and Aaron Constantino took his position at Cottonwood. So we're still maintaining staffing with all the residency programs. Our day staffing through the summer, it's a little short, which is kind of to be expected just due to the amount of people we lose during the summer. I will say, as I put into my chief's report, that the residents have just been done an outstanding job at filling the gap and making sure that we have that minimum staffing. Training is really unchanged. Regular training happens every Wednesday with the command training twice a month. We had 5 firefighters participate in S215, which is Wildland and Urban Interface class that was here, taught in the county on June 4th and 5th. Everybody who attended the class got a lot out of it. We recently had 3 firefighters go to the DNRC County Assist Team Camp, or the CAT Camp, June 10th and 12th. And that, it's kind of operated as a 2-day program where they set up a fire camp and kind of break out and do some work. And yours truly, myself, was one of the instructors as a member of the CAT team for that. On June 6th, we had our kind of annual meeting with the U.S. Forest Service to discuss kind of the operating plan of responding to and with the Forest Service in Forest Service jurisdiction lands. So that went really smoothly. The Forest Service has a lot of new people, a new FMO, who's Caleb Schreiber, and a new AFMO, who is Rob Spence. They're both new in those positions this year. Obviously, we sworn in the new firefighters, so the Spring Academy's wrapped up. Mac did an outstanding job with that. Ambulance transport plan, everything is working. We just keep like getting so close to finishing, and then Medicaid and Medicare has been a joy to work with. But I think Chris is confident that we are good to go. But that has been the only hang up of what has been to get this program fully on the road. We have been doing transports with our ambulances, and they have been going smoothly. The guys are trained well. We get good feedback from our customers on it. It's just this billing thing. It's just been a struggle to get up and running. Pindler has been great helping us through the process. But like I said, I think we are finally to the point where we are ready to go.
Way to go, Chief. Get a few people that are going to brag about how it didn't cost them anything to ride an ambulance, and then we're going to charge.
Can I add to that, Chief?
You certainly can.
Since the time that we actually submitted that application, it seems like every 7 to 10 days, they've been bumping me because they have questions, they want something else, they wanted something. Since the 18th of June, that was our last submittal, and it has been crickets, and every day that I check the website, it just says that it's in for review. So the good news is that we've been a couple weeks now, and they have not bumped me back. So I see that as being a good thing, but I would expect it to go through any day now, unless they come up with some new random thing that they need. So that's the good news.
So is it just setting you up as a provider or something for them, or?
Setting us up as a provider in the Medicaid system, which we must be certified in that system in order to charge any insurance group.
I see.
So that's kind of the government holdup on that end.
I see.
Because we must be willing to accept Medicare, Medicaid as an insurance provider. So that's what that whole application process is for. And literally, it's been very strange things. The very last thing was actually just what the address was off by a number, which I have no idea how that's been possible, because I've looked at that application many, many times, and our address has been the same each time. So it's ridiculous stuff. But the fact that they haven't been bumping me back is actually really good.
Nice.
Fingers crossed.
Cool. New ambulance is running good?
It's running great.
You like
yeah.
it?
Yeah. The guys are happy with it.
Nice.
The transport.
Yeah.
Very nice.
Yeah, and I mean, Chris has done just an outstanding job at chipping away at this. You know, as I mentioned last month, he has done all the legwork to get this stuff up and running. You know, all I do is bug him about getting it done. So
emotional support.
he's done really all the work to get this program up and running. No injuries in the last month, thankfully. Engine 6-3 was down again. It was down the month before for a couple of days. Colin was able to get an issue fixed with the primer on the pump, and it's back in service and everything is up and running.
Going back to item 10 on the Forest Service.
Mm-hmm. So with the, what's the story on the moratorium? Because I know originally they were talking about doing some controlled burns for slash and some of their prescribed
New
burns.
New Mexico.
Yeah, so what's the current status on that?
So the Forest Service is still on a national stand down of any prescribed burning, and it's anything. It's pile burning. It's, they can't put fire on the ground. And I can't remember, I think it was a 90-day.
That was the original, it was a 90-day.
Yeah. The local guys, Caleb, is still kind of tentatively moving forward with the fall burn program. But I don't think they know what nationally it's going to happen.
And when they do their prescribed burns, what's our involvement? Is there any, unless things turn to Mexico,
right.
It doesn't do that. Are we involved in any of those types of activities?
We've been invited to, because there's some fairly significant burns they would like to do in the South Hills. And they've invited us to participate in any way we would be interested in. I mean, historically, the Forest Service around here just hasn't done burning. I mean, the fact that they're setting
up... Or logging, or trimming.
Right, yeah. If these burns actually get pulled off, it'll be a very new thing for this area, for the Forest Service.
Mm-hmm. Well, they've got some huge slush piles up there, but they have to do something with it.
They do. And they have, I mean, we just haven't, you know, burning slush pile is not really the worthwhile work for us. And they've done slush pile burning up in Highlight for several years, but we just don't get involved with that. But there could be some opportunities for our folks to gain some experience if they do truly do some broadcast burning up in the South Mountains.
Because that's the idea, right, is to burn up into where they log, burn some of those feet and clear out some of the material.
Yeah, they have a burn unit just south of the Langer campground in the Highlight drainage. I think they have a couple spots at Mosier Creek they're looking at. Sourdough Canyon, they have a huge, I don't remember what the total acreage is of that proposed burn, but that's actually a fairly significant sized one. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Trustee activities? Announcements, we have our Wildland Barbecue tomorrow
night,
yep.
4 to 7.
Some nice cheeseburgers.
Great. What's that?
Some cheeseburgers.
Cheeseburgers or hot dogs?
Medium rare for Ken.
Please.
Firefighters are cooking.
Nice.
Or an extra large Tums.
19th.
The 19th.
I'll be here.
You're gone?
Yeah.
Should work for me.
It's fine with me. Unless we want to move it. It's all up to you guys.
I think I'm scheduled to fly in on the... I'm going to fly back, I think, the 26th.
Okay. So, everybody okay staying on the 19th?
Yes.
Okay. The 19th.
I'll be working.
Well, somebody's got to.
Cool.
And it may be.
We're adjourned.